Great. I feel like I should eat and talk at the same time. It's bad manners. I'm gonna put my cookie down. Is this off? Hi, everyone. I'm just gonna start, and if more people come, they come. So, I'm Justine, as you know, and I've been in really good company for this series for an exact vertigo, I feel like, in terms of the speakers. We've had Jen Y speak, and Aria speak, and Ben Camino speak. People I hold in very high esteem, people I love, actually. I like and I love, which, you know, those can be different things, but I like and I love. And they're also all artists that I'm currently working with. Or have worked with in the very recent past, like very recent past. So I was thinking, like, wow, I'm like the glue. And I get to go at the end. So I have this sort of privileged position of, like, having... I wasn't at everyone's talk because evenings are hard for me right now. I get sleepy. I'm growing a human being inside my body. So it makes me tired, but hi, join us. Hiya, come on in. I felt like there's something, I'm in a really privileged position to be able to speak tonight because I have listened to all of their talks, most of them on via Alexa through her devices. So I've spent the last week listening to my colleagues speak, and I thought, I had this grand plan, I'll just be really transparent. I had this grand plan to take all of your talks and rewrite them into another talk and not talk about anything that I think. I was going to see if I could reconfigure everything. Then as I started starting that, I was like, this is going to take me 6 months. Who am I? Who do I think I am? So I gave up. I gave up and I had to do another talk and that, I don't know. I was like, I'll do what I can do. So what I can do is I found things that each of these wonderful people said, and the artists said, and then I figured out how I could talk about what I do or what I'm interested in based on some statements they made, or come up against some things that they said, but mostly things that inspired me. There's a few things that I'll just, like, concrete things I can talk about, just three things I'll talk about my practice, and then I'll go into them, and then back to me, and back to them, and back to me, and we'll kind of go back and forth this way. I work on collaborative projects a lot, especially in the last 5 years. Almost, it feels like almost everything I do is a collaborative project, whether I'm the author or not. And I also have come to know that collaboration can be defined in many, many, many ways, some which I really like and some I don't like at all. But I think I like to work collaboratively because I always feel like people have better ideas than I do. And there's some power in this connectivity, like, of being together and working through something, whether that's at home hashing through ideas with my partner, or if it's, like, us getting into a studio, that's my partner, Josh, together to, like, work on a project. So that's one thing. Then there's this question of what is dance, and I think Ben said a similar thing, that this is also dance, this thing that is the name of this, that how the space has been named as you walk by is a really, is great. Yeah? What if this is also dance? And this what if place is really exciting to me. And it's really mercurial, right? Like, what is dance? It's like, it's changed my whole life in dance, what I think dance is. It's like, continue to change, and I kind of hope it's always going to change, because then I'll feel like I haven't died. Yeah? And then I try to remind myself to ask, like, how am I making or how are we making, as opposed to what are we making? And I'll talk about this in relation to a few other things. So starting with collaboration, I find collaboration to be this, like, really uncomfortable act of expansion. Like, generally really uncomfortable. Even if I love who I'm working with and I love what we're working on, I find it really uncomfortable some of that has to do with doubt, some of that has to do with having to take a position because you're in relation to somebody else, but it's also because it's an invitation into the unknown. And my favorite kind of collaboration is when the one person I'm with has their practice and I have my practice, and we decide to shed our practices in a way so that we can create a shared practice around the thing we're making work about. And this is something Josh and I did in a project that we did in 2010 called Copy. And I resisted the letting go much more than he did. I can admit that willingly. I was like, but I'm a dancer. And I let it go. And then we made something that I thought was great. And I don't think that I say that very often. Or that's something I've only started to say maybe more in the last 5 years. Like, oh, I think I made something great. Or something I love. So this is like a shift also in the mindset that's often attached to dance and dancers and choreographers. It's another conversation altogether. We can have that one later. But there's something about working with other people that makes you understand like where you are in thought around what you're making. And I also like that everyone has a responsibility to the idea. So it's not like I have a responsibility to like the person I'm working with. Like we have a responsibility to the idea. And then there's this thing where it like asks everyone involved to actually be involved. And I hope that's not like sounding silly, but there's something about like, oh yeah, that thing's so cool, I totally want to do it, and then... But if you've decided to do this project, like you have to decide to be involved. So that makes me excited about... We can get excited about so many things, but when you work on a project and you get your grant or you get like resources, then you start working on it and then you feel like you feel the support of involvement. And that's an exciting place to start making from. Hi. No, don't be sorry. Come on in. We're talking about collaboration. Briefly. And there's cookies that don't have dairy in them. But you have to come close to me to get one. So going back to my colleagues who spoke before me, so Ben, who spoke a couple weeks ago, Ben read something by somebody, I think her name was Edinger. Yeah, I found it almost impossible to listen to, like, I'll be honest, like, there was just, like, I was just, like, I, you know, and often when people read things, I just check out. So this is about my attention span, not necessarily about the words on the page, but when I listened to his talk again... there was like a few little phrases that actually caught my attention when I had it like on headphones alone, quiet in the house. So I'm gonna, and they stuck with me even though I'll admit that language irritates me a bit. Yeah, but they stuck out. So this is what it says, sharing in terms of resonance and influence and in one another's pulsating intensities. Psychic traces with one another and continuously transforming their shareable threads by continuously inspiring each other. I'll read it again because it's like, I don't know, is it just me that it's really hard to hear? It's hard to hear, right? Yeah, okay, good. I feel better then. Sharing in terms of resonance and influence and in one another's pulsating intensities. I'm taking it out of context, but I think it's better that way. Psychic traces with one another and continuously transforming their shareable threads. By continuously inspiring each other. So, when I think about these words, sharing, resonance, influence, psychic traces, shareable threads, I guess those are the words I like the best, yeah? And they sort of speak to like my immediate and extended communities. So I have my community in this room, my community in this city, and then I have this sort of larger dance community that I share my life with that's across the country, and then some that go to other countries too, lucky for me. And it's about, for me, it's the excitement. But I like think about when I hear these words that Ben spoke of somebody else, pretty much the whole night I'm going to quote other people quoting other people, just so you know. There's something about the sharing of knowledge, and I'm in this project. The project I share with Ben is called 8 Days. There's 20 people in it right now. In June, there'll be 27 people in it, and it's this project that keeps growing. So it started off with 9 in its first year. The second year it was 13. Last year it was 21, but one of them couldn't go. This summer it'll be 27, and. What I love about this project is that it keeps expanding. Like, it's not, and it's very, go back to that word, like, it's always shifting, it's always changing, but it's always kind of the same thing. And I'm going to read something that I wrote about 8 Days. But I also wrote it with Freya Olofsson, Katie Warden, MC Forte, Mary Claire Forte. We wrote it for a grant. But it'll give you an idea of what it is. So I'm quoting me and 4 other people for something we wrote for maybe the Canada Council. I don't know. So, 8 days emerged from the togetherness and communication that is germane to choreography. By thinking about the how of what we do even more than the what, a culture of respect, kindness, and hospitality is developed. Which doesn't mean our time together isn't jagged. That's not from the quote. That's me letting you know. Yeah? This cultivated space opens the sharing of creative strategies and tactics applied not only to art making, but also to activating engaged citizenship in the larger milieu. 8 days has developed a model characterized by sustainable expansion and continuous inclusion. Dance, alongside many other fields and modes of life, suffers from survivalist economies. The desire to make work usually exists in tension with affordability and capacity. 8 days articulates and shares the need to sustain and expand moments for artistic support and exchange. So what happens is, and anything you want me to repeat, just say, because I will. We get together for 8 days once a year, these choreographers, and we hang out and we share practice and we talk. The only structure in our day is our meals. We all work to make everything happen, so we all take turns cooking, we all take turns cleaning, we all take turns sharing practice. And how that manifests can be a million things. It can be from like doing a physical practice of shaking to doing a sitting practice to watching clouds to playing a game to cooking in silence. There's a number of things that we do. But it becomes a place where we can talk about maybe these things we don't ever get to talk about because we don't have time or we don't have the balls. And this is something Ario brought up at the end of his talk, was like, where's the criticism for dance and theater? Because there's criticism for visual art in abundance. And I think this has something to do with the language, not having a language, or not feeling like we have a language to talk about dance critically or theater critically. So it becomes like this very exciting and nurturing space, but it also becomes like I'm always scared a little bit at 8 days. Like I'm always like, oh shit. Like I feel intimidated because I'm in incredible company. But I also feel like it's a risky situation in a way. And it's uncomfortable and also kind of like summer camp. So those two things are wonderful. You know, it's like you go swim in the morning and then you kind of shit it all day while you try and talk about things you might know about. And it's just like something that had nothing to do with dance for me for the longest period in my career. So the last 3 years being in this project has been really exciting and refreshing because I have conversations there that I was really only having with my partner before that, who exists in visual arts. So it's nice when you start to feel like there's this need for another way of being in dance, like there's this real need for it. And every year we add more people and there's things we hold on to and there's things we let go of completely because we can't be like, this is how we do it here, because then the project doesn't actually exist in the way we profess that it does. Yeah, it has to be really amenable to whatever's happening in the moment. And there's something about this immediacy and being present with what's happening as opposed to imposing a way of working, which is sort of a theme for me the last several years in making work, in teaching, and being with other artists. We write, and one other part of the project is that we write a book. So we spend the 8 years to... 8 years. Maybe it'll be 8 years that we spend together. Oh my God, it's going to be like 5,000 people on an island. Oh my God. I think about that, like 40 choreographers, people who spend their life staring in mirrors at themselves together. Ah! No, they're really wonderful people. I would love to spend that much time with them. I could do this for 8 years. But we write a book. So, and the point of the book is that we can't have everybody in the entire community, dance community in Canada, with us, so we create this thing which is like a shareable trace of what happened. So going back to the words from that woman who I didn't really listen to or understand, but this idea about shareable traces, like what continues to move through the community even if you weren't there. So we write these two books, they're over there, I should have brought them over, that would have been the right thing to do, but they're over there, we can look at them after we're done. There's two now, we're on writing the third at the moment, and everybody creates a contribution that has something to do with what happened when they were there. And it can be something that occurred to them later. It could be a response to something. It could be describing something. It's sort of whatever. But it's a bookmark sometimes. Somebody makes a bookmark. I don't know. There's a number of things. And then we give it out for free. Last year we got an ISBN number. That was for the second book, which was the first time we did that. But the whole point is being able to just give them away. And we don't print a whole bunch because we all pay out of pocket. The other thing about 8 days that I love is that it is a labor of love. We do it because we want to, not because all the stars lined up or we got the money and we have support from this place and that place. Like, we all do it because we want to do it. Like when you used to make dances at, you know, people talk, oh, I remember we used to make dances at Harbor Dance at like 2 a.m. Pam would give us the keys and we'd get really high and then we'd go and we'd do that. And I just like love that. I'm like, yeah, remember when we used to do that? Yeah. I mean, I didn't do that here because I wasn't here, but something about that. And so there's something about possibility, and 8 days makes me feel like there's possibility for dance and choreography. And then that takes me to the lovely Jen Wai. And she was talking about a way of being in the body. And I'm going to quote her, like this is direct quote extracted from her talk. So it's a bit like somebody talking, but I won't do it well because it's not how I speak. Jen says, I think it would be interesting to talk about the idea of the care of the self through the lens of what it would look like to engage with the body in the same way you would engage with your ideas. And not necessarily in a health way, right? But knowing it, as opposed to fixing it. It's not about a gym body. And what are the sensations we are having all the time? How can we begin to build a closer relationship to the stuff that is happening in the physical? It's like a hack, like a self-hack. And be leveraged as a way of hacking the self. Maybe it could stretch, tap back into these ideas about the infinite, going beyond what we already know. And this, for me, is like antithetical to the majority of formal dance training. It's not necessarily about building a closer relationship with your body when you're in dance training. It's about becoming bionic, you know. And not all dance training, but a lot of dance training. It's about knowing your body to manipulate it. It's about knowing it to have command of it. It's about knowing it to expand its virtuosity, its capacity for virtuosity, and it's about knowing it for it to be a tool and possibly a tool with no agency. And I think what Jen asks is for something else, is that like you can know your body and be with your body so that even though she focused it towards the non-dancer, assuming that all dancers know all this stuff, but I think she took something for granted there. It proposes another way to be in the body. It asks for this dynamic investigation of the whole, of doing and not doing. And I think for me that's really interesting, like thinking about how we can not do when we're dancing. She uses this beautiful phrase, what does she say, galactic imaginary. I don't even really know what that means, but in my mind it makes me think of like, you know, if we were a galaxy in our body, like a galaxy of bodies in our bodies. What is its potential, and what is it just to get to know it without having to do anything? Like, just to be with your body. And when I think about this and dancers, like, putting it together with dancers who are, like, basically superheroes in my mind. Like, dancers are basically superheroes, I think. Period. More than athletes. I'll talk about that later, too, if you want. But I feel like the potential of them, like, getting to a place where they could be, all of us, myself included, could be in this place with our body where we're just, like, using it in the same way we use thought, which means sometimes there's no thought and sometimes there's rest as, like, a part of it, not as a weakness. I feel like it's almost frightening. The potential of it is almost frightening because it seems really exciting. And that I like this thinking, and then like, what is dance? Well, dance could be that also. Yeah, it doesn't have to be about this doing or this capacity for virtuosity or capacity. It could be about like what it doesn't have. And that makes me excited, even though it's a really half-formed idea. And then we had this discussion, and I'm going to talk about Alexa now, because she's part of this project, too. We had this discussion, somebody recently said to me they're writing something and they're talking about how I was, they thought this project I was doing was redefining dance. And I thought that, like, I was like, please don't write that, because that makes me feel really awful and embarrassed. Because I'm not, like, furthest thing from, I'm just, like, asking what else? Like, what else am I interested in? What else do I want it to do? What else do I think it can do? And like, And it's not a matter of redefining. Like, we should always be asking the question, like, asking that question, you know? And, I mean, what is dance? It's, like, what it's always been historically. It's, like, what it is at this moment, and it's what it's going to turn into. And those things kind of all exist at the same time. I think Ben talked a little bit about that, and I think Jen talked a little bit about that, too. Like, we're still, people are still doing repertoire from the Cunningham Company from the 60s, so we are dancing our past, yeah? Francesca and Natalie are in residence now, and they're doing something now in the present. There's residue of it in this room. And then we're always thinking about what we're going to do next. So I think it's, like, dangerous to put that on an artist to say you're redefining, because I am absolutely not. I'm just, like, I'm figuring it out for myself. And basically I'm following what I'm interested in. Which is really not something that goes well with the marketplace of dance, which is a conversation I want to open to you guys later. The one thing I'm going to read tonight that is not me quoting somebody else is from the Book of Recommendations by Michael Klein, Steve Balk, and Jeffrey Gormley. The book is back there. You can also find it free online. And they run the Institute for Social Choreography, which just looks at what's already happening in the world choreographically, patterns, how we organize. And they have 7 definitions for choreograph and choreography that I'd like to read to you. And I can repeat them if you want. So, 1, choreograph as a verb, to arrange relations between bodies in time and space. Choreography, verb, active framing relations between bodies, a way of seeing the world. 3, choreography as a noun, result of any of these actions. I really like this book. Choreography, noun, a dynamic constellation of any kind, consciously created or not, self-organizing or superimposed. Choreography, noun, order observed. Exchange of forces, a process that has an observable or observed embodied order. Choreograph, verb, to observe such an order. Choreography, verb, act of interfering with or negotiating such an order. So these 3 men write this book together, and you don't know who's written what through the whole book. So things come up that, like, come up against each other, and, like, it'll make sense. Then it's like, wait, you just said that wasn't the case, and then someone's saying it is. But they're not sort of defining who says what when. So for me, it's kind of a little choreography inside the book itself. And I wanted to read them to you because it invites this idea of the possibility of what choreography can be. And what I've been interested in these days is creating choreography as a set of circumstances for a performance to happen within. And, like, inviting the question Ben talked about, what is contemporary instead of, again, Ben says, but where is contemporary? So I will take that and I will say not what is performance, but where is performance? And, or not what is choreography, but where is choreography? And I've been having a lot of fun working that way. Kind of relinquishing a little bit of control, even though we work to know what we're doing, and Aria works with me in this project called Family Dinner, where we work to know what we're doing, but we know we will just never be able to navigate it with any sort of aplomb. So it's this thing that's always sort of falling apart. And David's been there a couple times, and it's fairly uncomfortable. Or, like, we're all, like, just hanging on, like, the whole time. While we work to have dinner with each other. I feel like what I like about working this way, and I'll explain the project in more detail so I don't seem like I'm not making sense in a moment, is that it's like you feel your way through it, so you're feeling the choreography maybe more than you're able to watch the choreography, and the organization of, and, you know, this is not new, yeah? It's just, like, what I'm working on right now, so you can have a sense of how I'm working, is that there's 6 performers and 6 dinner guests / audience / viewer well, you don't get to be the viewer. You don't. That's not allowed. You couldn't possibly see that much. But anyway, and we sit at a table, so there will be a performer in between every guest, dinner guest, which is what we call them, like our guests for dinner. And we perform. We perform dining while we speak, while we try and have dinner with these people and get to know them. So our bodies are doing one thing, but we're working very hard with our minds to be in the present moment with everybody, have a conversation, and be watching cues for when the score shifts and all of these things. So it's like this the whole time. My friend Daryl Tracy would say we're all eyeballs and assholes. That's how he would explain it this whole time. And Ario, I'll go a little bit more in more detail about that in a second, but Ario, when he was doing his talk, he read about this theater of catastrophe, Howard Park's Theater of Catastrophe, and he brought that to the table one day when we were working. And when we work on family dinner, we spend a lot of time talking and not a lot of time practicing and a lot of time arguing in a very productive way, mostly. And there are some things that he said at the table that he also said in his talk here that I think are worth reiterating because they have something to do with how we work or how we've worked. So he says, quoting Howard Park, he says, no attempt is made to satisfy any demand for clarity or deceptive simplicity of a single message. Each work is a public challenge in which actors and audience are inspired to find meaning and resonance from a multiplicity of interpretations. One of the actors was talking about it and saying, I don't know which book it was, Ario, maybe you can help me, but it might not matter. They try not to iron out the inconsistencies. The actor said, the inconsistencies are there and we have to play with them, inviting a greatest plurality of meanings. And then in response to an audience saying, well, I didn't understand what happened, the actors or the performers would say, we didn't understand it either. We simply believed it. And I think this has a lot to do, like, we work like this, like, where we're all kind of like, I don't know. But we're just committed to doing the thing, regardless of whether or not we have a handle on it. And I would argue we don't have a handle on it. And after doing it for 2 years, we don't have a handle on it. And we'll keep not having a handle on it. I can read, like, how some of this, like, this work came to be. I was reading Gaston Bachelard's Poetics of Space that my partner gave me. We moved into a field house, one of these field house residencies, and as the dancer and the choreographer, you're in this tiny space, and you're like, okay, how is this going to change what I make? And there was so clearly a dining room in my mind, which also comes from growing up in the diplomatic corps, and, like, kitchen, dining room, like those two things being beside each other, and my having a number of dinner parties, like in my growing up, like many, 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 many dinner parties, and being silent, being like the good Canadian child, and being silent, but watching everything and realizing how things were super screwed up. Or before you'd go to someone's house, my mom would be like, okay, nobody talk about Thailand, because we all know what he does in Thailand, so nobody bring him. Don't look at his hair, he just got hair plugs, and don't look at that. And there'd be all these things in the car that you can't do, and you'd get there, and you'd be like, you didn't know what to do, because you're like, you can't do this, and you can't do that, and you can't look at this person, and you can't talk about this, and that there's all these rules, and it was like, how could we kind of create that and still have the sense of hospitality and follow all the etiquette and the behaviors that are expected? That was sort of the question, and how can there's all this sort of imposition on the body around dining formally with strangers and or colleagues in a certain construct. So we started to look at the body as like a container for all of that movement, and we really worked on it as movement. So over the course of each dinner, we would watch our... First, we learned ourselves having dinner. We videotaped ourselves having dinner. We learned a portion of ourselves. So it was like a 3-minute chunk, right? Then you all learned yourself, except for Ario wasn't at that dinner, so then he was like doing a version of Dave and Josh that was like, it was weird, that's a whole other story. And we used that as like our blueprint for movement. So we had our first dinner, we built the score off this blueprint, And we try to stay doing those things with our body the entire time, as you would, like, always have your elbows down and always have, like, but we kind of changed what it was. And ate with people and tried to speak in real time and notice the score changing and the lights change and, you know, you're supposed to do something else and so, like, in like, fraught with peril the whole time. But also what we do is we observe our guests and we borrow from them, we borrow a gesture from them that we felt was, like, quintessential to them in our minds in that moment. Possibly, maybe, had nothing to do with who they are. Maybe they've done it once and they'll never do it again. And then that started to be our vocabulary. So we now have, like, 203 gestures that have to be performed at the dinner. You have to get through all of these people while you eat, while you talk, and also other things are going on that you're also adhering to. So it was about creating this sort of this possibility for a shared creation with the audience. Somebody told me it was transgressive, and I, maybe. I think we do that anyway, you know? Like, we do that with each other when we're one-on-one with somebody and we're eating with them or we're talking, speaking with them. We take on their body as an empathic way to navigate a conversation. We do this anyway. So at one point, there was, like, one person who was quite offended, but then she decided to gift me her gesture. And I was like, all right, that's fine. you won't know if we do it anyway, so. But no. But we had a big conversation because she felt like it was some sort of, but she didn't know what it was. We also don't tell people what we took from them, and we don't name it. We just, because it's neither here nor there, because it's all about, it's not about, we can know who they are, but it's not important that anybody else knows if our bodies, because many of the things we do, we never mimic our guests at the table at the time, but people often think we are. They're like, oh, you were doing what I was doing. And it's like, nope. We weren't. Those things just happen at tables. People wipe their mouth that way. People chew with their mouth open. These things happen. So it's also like, what I am enjoying about it is also is that it's allowing people to become more aware of how they are in their bodies in this circumstance. I'm going to quote Alexa Martin. Because she wrote this really great thing about family dinner, I thought, for Issue magazine. So she wrote, in this work, the personal is depersonalized. The materials for construction of identity are made open source, and the singular is made communal. That's a much better way of saying what took me, like, a really long time to just say. And it functions as a palimpsest, so each performance is written upon the one before. So there's this accumulation, and with every performance, then we have to get together and be like, okay, now what do we have to change? So we're always changing the score, so we're always being responsive, so the work always stays, like, it's a performance, it's a rehearsal, it's an embodied recording, super uncomfortable, and it's fun, but it's like working on a lot of things because I wanted to make a work that wasn't like, oh, this is the thing and this is how it goes and that's it. I wanted like aliveness and for us to always be working on something. So I wanted a practice to be the work as much as the work is a work. It's like it's a practice. It's a way for us to practice together. And about it being palimpsestic, Alexa writes, I hope I'm not embarrassing you. I just think it's so great what you wrote. She says the body of both performer and guest move forward into the work's next iteration, yet the relationship between performer and participant is circular. The work exists in the space between what has been and what is. And it's nice to make a work that can't exist without the audience. Like we practice alone, which is why when we're alone and we don't have an audience or our dinner guests, that's why we just blab. Because we kind of have nothing to do without them there. Because the work doesn't exist without them. We don't know what to do, so we just argue about stuff. And I have, like, I get to work with really amazing people who make my life hard, like, make my thinking hard, which is really, really refreshing. That's enough probably for me to talk about. I wanted to sort of put a question out that we can talk about it or not, or I can just leave it there, which has nothing to do... Oh, there's really one thing I want to read to you guys. So my dad is going to be in family dinner next year. He's going to perform with us. Hold on to your hat. Here we go. He's being a little bit of a diva already. He asked me, he's like, you know, I was thinking I could be Spanish. And I'm like, no, that's not. He speaks like very fluent Spanish, but he's like, I was thinking I could be Spanish. And I think I asked him to write a bio because I had to write a Canada Council grant and I had to include my dad. And so I asked him to write a bio because then he was like, but I'm so interesting. And he was being kind of himself about it. How am I going to write something in 250 words, you know? And he's not a performer. I mean, clearly he is, but he's not. He's not. And I just felt like our project needed a different age at the table with the performers and maybe someone who wasn't so good at it. And someone who was going to completely destabilize all of us. And he will do that, I assure you. Yeah? And he's charming, and he's a diplomat, and he has a lot to do with why I'm making this project. Also, I did say my mother creates almost all the menus for our dinners. So I tell her all the food restrictions, and then I send her the restrictions, and then she swears about it, like, what's wrong with people in Vancouver? How come they can't eat food? No. She'll be like, fucking gluten. No onions? Are you fucking kidding me? And then she'll send me a menu, and then I make what she sends. So my family is like, I just felt like my dad, he's retired. He likes dancers. So I asked him to send me a bio, and I guess I'll just leave it with this, because it's beautiful. So this is what my father, Paul Edward Ross Chambers, wrote. Born in the middle of the last century, Paul had to grow up without the benefit of cars with seat belts, computers, cell phones, or the internet. Despite this handicap, he now streams Netflix on his iPad and programs his PVR to record Vikings and the Americans on FX. An adaptability gained through a career working for the federal government in Africa, Asia, and Latin America, until he retired to hone his golfing and baking skills. Cinnamon rolls and bran muffins are his favorite way to start the day. Paul is the father to a medical librarian, a contemporary dance artist, and a high school student. We'll finish there.
I want to know what the question is.
Oh, yeah. It's kind of heavy, though. I'm like, oh, that was such a nice way to finish. Maybe I should shut up. This can be something else. Well, I was just thinking about modes of production a lot lately. I'm always thinking about it, and mostly because this project, and many of the projects, when Josh and I made Copy, we felt really determined to make it free, so that it became very, there was no box office revenue. But we felt like it was important that it was free so that people could come. David did the similar thing with Walking, Weeping.
Vancouver Calling, Weeping Bench.
Thank you. I say it wrong every time. It's embarrassing.
And you too.
Okay, yeah. Good. Where there were like a ton of things going on. And at one point, I think you even, was it this project, another one, where you sent out like how much it actually costs? No, that was a different project. Yeah. And I think there's like this problem. Like, I'm realistically wondering how many different models can be included in our current structures, like our funding structures and our the way we have to account for what are like the accounting we have to do, whether it's money or just like justification. And I just feel like we need to recalibrate this importance we place on box office revenue. I know like there's a feasibility thing, and I'm really like, I'm being a bit like in a perfect blue sky, lollipops and rainbows kind of place. But like Family Dinner is a fucking expensive project, right? To like one dinner costs $1,800 for like the food, the wine, and to pay the people who are in the room working their asses off. And that's like they're even getting not the best performance fee given. Sometimes they're there for 4 hours depending on who comes to dinner, yeah? And that's like, it's modest. It's modest what people are being paid for their time. But you know, you go to like shop a work. Well, I don't. I'm really bad at it. The one time I tried to push off the Sierra, and it was just like I had a nervous breakdown after. It was just terrible. So obviously I don't work well with the marketplace, but there is this, it's like people are like, oh, well, is there a way you could do it so that I could get more people in there? And like maybe we could videotape it and we could project it on a park so 500 people could watch. And this just like this, how this just starts to undo the work, or how like this idea of creating a model for production that fits inside maybe the grant applications, but more importantly, it's like, when are we going to stop making work for presenters? Or like how they're working? And then I also feel this thing like all the presenters want the newest, hottest, most not done, underground, exciting, da-da-da-da-da, but like those things don't always fit in the models that their theaters or their festivals operate under. So, and then there's this thing about making decisions about, like, is one person having an amazing time more then I wonder, okay, one person has this incredible experience, it changes the world, and I know that happened with your project. Or we can pick 400 people in a theater and they all hate what they saw. And like, you got the box office revenue, but like this like idea of like intrinsic impact of performance on the viewer, like this kind of thing. And I just think that maybe strengthening this idea of like actually strengthening engagement, like truly strengthening engagement in our community, may weaken the box office. And wouldn't that be, could that be okay? I guess that's what I'm wondering. Would it be okay? Like it might.
What was the perspective?
Like strengthening actual engagement with art may mean that we weaken the box office, or often means that we weaken. Like there's not box office, right? Like your project was free, and how do we?
It's not box office. It's still a fraction of the actual.
Yeah,
cost.
Exactly. And I just like I'm still like I'm trying to wrap my head around that. In my recent grant, I had to defend why there was. I mean, we are making our project bigger. We're adding 3 people. So it'll be like 9 performers and 9 audience instead of 6 and 6. But that makes the price like... Also, so I'm like, well, what was the value? And then I was like I was talking to you about this the other day, that I had to like defend that, oh, that we're all changed and that this experience isn't about how many people we can reach, but like how we reach people. And again, it's like the how more than the like... Yeah, and I'm just like, I'm trying to work through it, and if anyone has any thoughts, I would love to work through it with you.
Mm-hmm. I've been thinking about that a lot, because I think this conversation like maybe last Friday, we talked about it once with three different things, and the idea is like, in the middle arts, there isn't that pressure, they do ask for audience members and ground positions, but they're always fudged. Like, no one has exact numbers. Like, we have no idea how many people came through this door in the past year. Like, we wouldn't count. I think I found in the archives, I found one of those like tickers. Mm. And I was like, really? Someone was doing that? Like every single person who walks in the door, they was like, oh, there's one more person. And I think that that's been like relinquished a lot, especially in Canada, through artist work centers. And this is kind of the Canada Council, I don't know why or how this happened, has realized that there's like a role that artist work centers play that doesn't have to deal with audience members. That, like, it's like a supportive part of the institutional economy of the art world that is important. That maybe, you know, people who are going to walk down the street and see what's going on in here, they're like going to be weirded out and then they're going to walk away. but there's still a role that is played there that fosters some kind of development. I think that definitely much more institutional,
I guess,
larger and larger institutions have more power.
I think if you think of it, I think it's important in box office if you have seats.
Yes.
So if you are building and you have seats, then what those seats are for is for putting people in and getting money. It's important.
Yeah.
But you are, do your seats.
There's 6.
I mean,
and my body? No.
Seats, yes.
No, not on my body. I mean, maybe in some weird dance way I could, like, get on all fours, but, yeah, no.
Yeah, you're not weird. I usually do some public performances, and I figure I perform downtown maybe 4 hours. Maybe I perform directly to 10 people, but in that time, probably about 1,000 people walk by, so I write down 1,000 people. You just it's not faking, but it's just it's recontextualizing.
Yeah.
People walk down the street all on like along
kids.
Yeah.
Dinner is happening.
Yeah.
There's been literally thousands of people.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the performances here, I think I've really definitely experienced that.
And so much of that isn't just about accounting for numbers, but, like, how much your money you're getting from those numbers, right? There's this sort of direct relationship with, like, between, like, saleability of your work. And we really, like, I knew when we made this, started making this project, when I realized, when we started to realize what we were working on or how it was going to go and that it was actually going to be a dinner, that it wasn't going to be a show about dinner, that it was actually going to be dinner, that we were like, oh, well. And our very first set of performances was at a total presenter mafia junket thing, like called Dance in Vancouver. And every night, our first, not our first, because we had like some practices with real people, presenters are real people. People who there's no stakes, I guess. Well, but we had 5 nights of a minimum of 6 presenters a night eating with us. But it felt really like, I was like, well, no one's going to buy this shit, it's too expensive. There's no way. So we were really relaxed and actually had a wonderful time, and I almost never knew who they were or where they're from. I just knew their first name. People stayed after and got drunk with us, didn't want to leave. It was really, really wonderful. And I was like, oh, this is great. Like, we didn't even worry about it because there was just like, no one's going to buy this. Who can afford this? Like, that, or how does this fit into the programming of the Oakville Center for the Arts? It doesn't, you know? So it was like very liberating. But then I think, oh, it's really wonderful to work on something for 2 years, 3 years, 4 years. It's wonderful to keep working and revisiting work if you, as long as you're not hating each other and it. And I'm not there yet with this project. I think there's like a lot for us to figure out still. So there's this like, oh, how do you, it's like goods for services or goods, and it gets a weird thing.
I think there's a difference between like visual arts and performance, and like, audience numbers for performances and what saleability, how many tickets can we sell, how many presenters can we get. With visual arts, it's more about, I'm just reading to give you this money. Who's going to be affected by it? And it's not, it's, and that, like, that is more of a question rather than, because there's no, like, we're never going to charge.
Yeah, there's not a box office revenue line on your on your grant application.
And so, like, it's more about, like, how many people are you reaching, what difference are you making, which is definitely more subjective than. How much are your tickets and how many?
But that also is one of the questions, like, who are you reaching and how many, and, you know, what's the value and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, I was thinking about this. Who is this person that we're making the work for? Because with this specific project, it means that it seems to me a very small group of people. Maybe it is meant for very rich people who are actually going to pay big money.
$500 a seat.
Exactly. Just be in the dinner, or maybe that is the audience.
In this context,
in this,
like,
context,
in relating to this question, that would be, yeah.
Yeah, especially if you're dealing with the, what the source of the whole project was, your family, your dinner at the embassy, right?
Being a part of an
being
embassy
part of
culture.
That kind of group of people. Maybe this show is meant for that group of people. I don't know.
Also, the show has repercussions too, because people will talk about it or it's written about, and then people think, oh, there's some weird show that you go and you have dinner and these dancers doing this weird shit. But not really, it's kind of confusing. That's like, so the story is resonates outside of work, and that collects a large audience.
Yeah, that's true.
And just to add, is that we have a lot of the younger dancers, those be like minded people coming into the room. They love it. But then who do we actually unsettle? Are people who are coming from more established, older people who did theater or dance for a long time, those people actually got unsettled. And I'm arguing the piece is for them.
Yeah, yeah.
Not for the young, like-minded people
yeah.
who are like, they love it.
But we can say that about all dance contemporary artwork too, right? Like, it's like, who needs to see it?
Who needs to see it?
Yeah, like, it's always a room full of our peers.
Yeah.
You know.
But I guess I haven't had the joy of experiencing this family dinner, but I guess something, when I hear you talking about it, it makes me think of the